Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
As the kids like to say, Gerrit Cole. That's it. Gerrit Cole. That's it. There is your take. There is nothing else to say when it comes to this guy. Nothing else to talk about when it comes to last night's Game 5 of the ALDS between Tampa Bay and Houston. Gerrit Cole. That's it. And because of Gerrit Cole, we now have the series that everybody wanted and the series everybody expected, Astros v. Yankees. However, it sure as hell did not turn out the way we had hoped and the way we got there. Not after Houston took a 2-0 series lead and then Tampa Bay battled back to win games 3 and 4. That meant that Houston's 107-win regular season was on the verge of looking like LA's 106-win regular season. Except for one thing. Houston was going back home and Houston had Gerrit Cole on the mound. And Gerrit Cole is a beast. This guy's a monster. If you have been sleeping on this guy because he started his career in Pittsburgh or because he's behind Justin Verlander in the rotation or for any reason at all, now would be a great time to stop. As one MLB front office official told 538 before that game, quote, "He's essentially throwing laser beams or as close to it as I've ever seen from a human," end quote. I'd agree with that. I need some evidence, though, that this dude is in fact human. I think the Rays need some evidence that this guy's in fact human. Listen to Rays manager Kevin Cash.
"The frustrating part is that Gerrit Cole's on the mound on the other side and the run he's been on is second to none. So that presents its own challenges."
The run that he's on is second to none, which I'll get to in a minute. But if you need more, how about shortstop Willy Adames?
"I don't know if anybody can get better than that. You know, he was unbelievable last start, and today he was still the same. It was like we just couldn't make an adjustment, and, you know, that's why he's one of the best pitchers in the league. You know, he was really tough tonight."
Well said, because that was a masterclass in pitching a must-win game. Filthy, nasty, overpowering, unhittable, inhuman. There really aren't words to describe a performance like that. The guy was amazing. He started with a couple of strikeouts, a walk, and a ground out in the first inning. Then the Astros bats went to work. Two singles meant Jose Altuve was up with runners on the corners.
"Go one. Fastball, and that's lined into right center field, and that's going to get down for a base hit. Springer scores. Brantley on his way to third. An RBI single for Altuve. His fourth run batted into the series."
Astros radio. You know me, I don't play favorites. Altuve is one of my favorites. I don't play favorites. Alex Bregman might be my all-time favorite.
"Breaking ball, and that's lined toward right center field, and that's headed for the gap and is going to the wall. Brantley scores. Altuve tearing around third. Altuve will score. Two-run double for Bregman."
Least surprising start ever, especially when the guy they're going up against is tipping his pitches. By the end of the first, it was 4-0 Astros, and yet Tampa was not going anywhere. Eric Sogard led off the top of the second with a bomb.
"There would, as we go to the second, and the first pitch driven in the air to deep right by Sogard, back to the wall, and there's one right back. A solo homer for Eric Sogard on the first pitch of the inning, and the Astros lead is now 4-1.
Rays radio, and that is one right back, and all of a sudden we've got ourselves a ball game. No, we don't. Not when Gerrit Cole is on the mound, launching laser beams. 8 innings, 10 strikeouts, 2 hits, 1 run. All right, so that's one game, right? You want a larger sample size? How about this? 1 run in 15 and two-thirds innings, 25 strikeouts in the series. You need more? A bigger sample size? The guy struck out 10 or more in 11 straight starts. You want a larger sample size? 18-0 with 251 strikeouts in an ERA barely over 1.6. That's what Cole has done since May 22nd. And if you need perspective there, May 22nd was an off day between games 4 and 5 of the Raptors-Bucks conference finals. A basketball season ended and is now starting again in the time that Cole has been unbeaten. It's amazing. And a lot has changed since May 22nd, but one thing that hasn't is Gerrit Cole. Actually, he might have changed. He might have gotten better. Well, he did come up short in one regard. He came up short when he got the Rays to ground out and hit a couple of fly balls in the third. Unfortunately, that snapped a streak of 73 straight innings with a strikeout. In the expansion era, the next best streak is 40 innings by some dude named Pedro Martinez. And yet, that was still a game. Because after the first inning, that conveyor belt of Rays pitchers were not giving up anything. It was 4-1, and it felt damn near like a replay of the Nats and the Dodgers last night. You know, that one team that wouldn't die, that one team was still hanging around. That's the Rays. They were hanging around. They would not go away until Michael Brantley ended all of that in the bottom of the eighth.
And that is line deep to right field. Garcia racing back, looking up. See you later! Michael Brantley goes yard, and the Astros go up 5-1.
It's been said, but not enough. Brantley is such a pro. Pro's pro. He ended it right there. And if he didn't, then the next batter, Jose freaking Altuve, did.
Pagan delivers. And that's driven deep to left center field. Racing back, Kiermaier looking up. See you later! See you later! Back-to-back jacks. First Brantley, now Altuve. It's 6-1 Astros.
Shut it down. Let's go home. Time to shut it down in the ninth and start the freaking party. Go ahead, start that party.
Big-time performances by big-time players today. Unbelievable job. Congratulations. ALDS champions. The best part, the moment's never too big for this team. And everybody's got to come through our house to get to the World Series.
This dude's looking act like they've been there before. H.A. Hinch is so right. The moment's never too big for those guys. And their stars do play like stars when they have to. So now we're right back to where we started. Right back to where we knew we'd end up. Yankees v. Astros. And if you think Houston is going to roll right through that series on the back of Verlander and Cole, I suggest you think again. Yes, Houston won 107 games. New York won 103 games. Not exactly a huge fall off. And the Yankees did it with a ton of injuries. And the Yankees are well rested. And the Yankees can mash. And the Yankees have that nasty bullpen. And against Minnesota, they found ways to win with pitching and defense. But it's not like the Astros aren't good. It's not like the Astros didn't benefit from that series against Tampa. Yes, the rotation might not be lining up exactly the way they wanted it to, but Cole says it probably is not going to matter.
We were tested and we responded well. We had to get hit in the face twice, so I like the way that we answered the bell, and looking forward to the next series.
That's a SoCal right there. That is a SoCal native right there. 8-2 haymakers, and they still landed the knockout blow. Now we get the fight that everybody knew was coming, the fight that everybody wanted. Man, give each other the hands. And you know what? Go ahead and do it for 6 or 7 games. It's going to be great. Let's get it on. They are at the Rams on Sunday. We are joined by DeForest Buckner. DeForest, good to have you on. How are you?
Oh, thank you for having me, Jim. I'm doing great.
Good, man.
You got me ready to lift the weight room with your intro song, man.
Dude, let me tell you something. I got the right music for you. You got the right resume for us. It's good. It's good to have you. All right, so I know you're focused on the Rams, but take me back to Monday night. National TV, primetime, Cleveland in your house. What was the mood heading into that game, and how good did it feel to come out and dominate the way that you guys did?
Yeah, you know, we came into the week, you know, just ready to go. We knew they had a lot of talent on the offensive side and the defensive side, and we knew our capabilities, and we knew it was a big stage. It was Monday night. It was our time to show everybody, you know, nationally, really, just to show them what we can do and what the 2019 49ers are all about.
You know, it seems like maybe you guys knew, but for a lot of people outside, that might have been a coming out party. In fact, from the outside, it felt like a statement win against a team with a lot of hype. Did that feel like a statement win to you?
Most definitely. You know, they had a lot of hype, and everybody, you know, counts us out in almost every game. And, you know, we try not to focus on that kind of stuff, and we just focus on ourselves each and every day. And like I said, we know what we can do, and we just wanted to show it, you know, to everybody else.
This just in, Men's Health calls the Peloton bike, quote, the best cardio machine on the planet, end quote. So how do they do that? I'll tell you how. It's true. I know it for a fact. In fact, I didn't need Men's Health to tell me the Peloton is the best cardio machine on the planet. I already knew that because I have one. I've had a Peloton now for a few years, and I absolutely love the machine. I love it because I can work up a great sweat at home. I can do so for less than the cost of a studio class. I don't need to go to the gym. I come home, I go right into my home office, and I get my workout in. It's that easy. Maybe you can't find a workout that keeps you engaged. Peloton is here for that. It's an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. It's addictive. I love it. The bike itself is compact. It's 4x2, so you can fit it in virtually any space in your home, no matter how small, and it looks amazing. Plus, you've got great value. One subscription is all you need to get unlimited classes for the entire family. And once again, it's all about convenience. No commute, no reservations, thousands of rides that you can take live or on demand anytime you want, all for less than the cost of a studio class. And right now, Peloton is offering a limited-time offer. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get an amazing cardio workout at your home. Go to onepeloton.com, use the promo code ROME and get started. onepeloton.com, use the promo code ROME to get started. I have a Peloton. I bought it myself years ago. I love it. DeForest Buckner is joining us. Now, that defense that you play with is so fast, it's so tough, it's fierce. How would you describe the attitude and the identity of that unit?
Yeah, really. We just like to play kind of punch you in the mouth kind of defense. You know, we got guys swarming to the ball. Obviously, you can see when you know, like you said, it's a fast defense. You know, we preach every day on running to the ball and attacking the ball. You know, last year, obviously, we had a record low in turnovers and, you know, especially in interceptions too. And, you know, this year we wanted to come. We built this defense. They invested a lot in this defense on all around. And, you know, you can see the guys taking it, you know, to heart and really trying to make a fast and physical defense that we've been missing the past couple of years here at the Niners.
Niners defensive lineman DeForest Buckner is joining us. You know, the numbers overall might not have been great last year, but individually you had a monster season, 67 tackles, 12 sacks, 17 tackles for a loss, 20 quarterback hits. Did that feel like a breakthrough for you? And if so, what kind of expectations did you put on yourself for this year?
Yeah, most definitely. Last year was definitely a breakout season for me, even though my team didn't do as well. But, you know, it was really my whole thing last year was finding that extra step and finishing, you know, when I get to the quarterback. And I finally did, and I ended up with 12 sacks. And I knew my capabilities. I knew I would be able to get double-digit sacks. And I put that on myself. And this year, really coming in, you know, having new additions, especially on the D-line, having guys come off the edge and, you know, having the whole D-line work together, as you saw Monday night, you know, it's definitely been, I would say, beneficial for me. And not completely yet, because I'm still getting a lot of double teams. And, you know, those guys are obviously coming off the edge and getting a lot of benefit from me getting doubles. And I'm freeing up some guys. And really, just this year, I'm just taking it one game at a time, you know, doing what I can do to help my team win.
DeForest Buckner joining us. I'm glad you mentioned the double teams. I was going to ask you about that. Because you are getting doubled so much, I know you've spent a lot of time watching guys like Aaron Donald, my guy, Calais Campbell. What kind of things have you learned from watching them?
Yeah, it's really just, you know, hand placement and things like that when they're getting doubled. You know, obviously Aaron Donald is one of the best in the game, and if not the best in the game right now. And, you know, he's obviously getting a lot more double teams than he did last year. But, you know, when he does get doubled, you know, he still tries to find a way to win and get pressure on the quarterback. And I'm just trying to find, you know, little things that he does with hand placement and things like that on, you know, when he's trying to split those double teams.
Listen, I understand that you're about the team. You're going to be about the team first and about the bottom line. But I'm looking at your numbers, and I'm looking about what you mean to that team. It seems to me you don't always get the level of national recognition that you might deserve. Your teammates and coaches know this. They seem bothered by this, that you were left off the top 100 players list because they want you to get the respect that you have earned. Does it bother you, and do you get a little extra motivation or fuel from it?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I try not to pay attention to that kind of stuff, but yeah, you know, like any other guy, any other ball player that, you know, plays really well and deserves recognition. I mean, it gets under my skin a little bit, you know, like I always preach is a respect thing, you know, and, you know, I make sure every opportunity that I get to play on Sundays or Mondays or Thursdays, whatever it is, to show everyone what I can do and my abilities.
DeForest Buckner is my guest. I would even say it's not just Sunday or Thursday or Monday. It's every day of the week. And I say that because Kyle Shanahan talks about how hard you go in practice. And the fact that he actually made the point that you go as hard as anybody he's ever been around in practice. One of the things you've talked about personally is the fact that you are motivated to be the best. So where does the motivation come from? Is it from an outside source or is it purely internal?
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest, it's just purely internal. Everything I do, I want to, you know, I want to be the best at. And I always, you know, if I'm doing something that I love, I want to do it to the best of my abilities, and I know I can do it really well, you know, and at a high level. And so I hold myself to that standard every day. And you know, if you're not working hard in practice, then you're not gonna benefit from anything in the game. And you know, how you practice, how you play, and that's how I always live my life, and how I was taught. And I mean, that's why I approach the game, you know, at a high level every single day.
All right, so if you hold yourself to that standard, then if you start to make the kind of plays that you're making, you can start to hold those around you to a similar standard. As an example, when you first came in, you led by example, but now your teammates are talking about how you're becoming more and more vocal and that they do listen. Do you take that responsibility as a leader seriously? I would imagine so. And then how much do you appreciate that new responsibility?
Yeah, I definitely take it seriously, you know. I didn't understand it at first when, you know, I was kind of reserved and really just led by example. But, you know, growing over the past couple of years and becoming more vocal, I see the type of power that, you know, what I say, you know, my teammates really, really take in, you know. And, you know, I obviously got to know how to approach each and every single guy differently because everybody, you know, responds to, you know, criticism or anything differently. You know what I mean? And everybody's different. And so I definitely take that to, you know, really serious. And, I'm just honored, to be honest, to have that type of respect amongst my teammates.
Niner DeForest Buckner joins me for another moment. Listen, speaking of teammates, there's a story from a little while back that Richard Sherman was talking to you about your dog, which is a Cavalier Poodle. Sherm thinks a big guy like you should have a big dog. How big is this dog, and what does he not understand about this?
Yeah, my dog, Kimo, he's a little Cavalier Poodle. He's about, 17 pounds. What Sherm doesn't understand is, I like to chill. You know, I'm a really chill guy. My dog's real chill. He's pretty chill, you know, and he doesn't shed. That's my whole thing. You know, having the dog, I don't like having, you know, dog hair everywhere and everything, especially when you have people over, you know, they get all over their clothes and stuff like that. And my dog doesn't shed, which is a big thing. And also he's, you know, he's small enough to where, you know, when he takes a shit, I don't need to worry about some, you know, big piles of shit everywhere. So, yeah.
My man, perfectly said. And I'm a huge Sherm guy, DeForest, but yeah. I don't know what he doesn't understand about that. You laid that out perfectly. Perfectly. All right, so last thought, and thanks for sharing that. Now you're facing the Rams on Sunday. When you look at their offense, what is the biggest key to stopping them in your mind?
Yeah. I mean, they're obviously the bread and butter over the past couple of years has been the run game. You know, with Todd Gurley and Malcolm Brown's been playing at a high level, and obviously Jared Goff, he benefits off of with a play action pass, and that's really where he's comfortable. And you know, we really just got to attack the run game like we've been doing week in and week out, and we attack this run game and really stop it early, and you know, don't let them gain any confidence and cause them to drop back. Then that's when our front seven and the back end can really get after it.
As mentioned, it was a breakthrough season last year where he had 12 sacks, a former Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year at Oregon. DeForest Buckner, my guest. My man, I appreciate you coming on early this morning. Great to have you on. DeForest, good luck this weekend.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Jim.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Listen, do not make a mistake. Don't make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty, it's tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach, wherever. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality of what you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Now, going back to last night's game. Before that game last night, the Giants had ruled out Saquon Barkley, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, and Wayne Gallman. In other words, if you play offense for the Giants, there was a really good chance you were not playing last night. So doing that on a Thursday night in Foxborough with a rookie QB going up against Bill Belichick, you knew the G-men were in trouble. Serious trouble. And I don't know if you know this, but maybe you've heard about Bill Belichick's record against rookie quarterbacks. In Foxborough, it's pretty good. In fact, not good, special. This guy handles rookie quarterbacks the way he handles tough questions about questionable personnel moves. He completely shuts them down. Except last night, that's not what happened. Because while the Patriots did jump out to a 14-0 lead, before you know it, it's a 14-14 game on this TD from Daniel Jones to Golden Tate.
Out of the gun, Jones lofts a high pass to the right, juggled and caught. Golden Tate racing down the sideline. Tate will take it in. Touchdown, Giants. 64 yards on a catch and run by the veteran Golden Tate.
Westwood won and then chased that with a sack and a fumble by Tom Brady.
Second and 12, shotgun Brady faked the handoff. Brady has time. Now pocket collapses. Brady is hit and the ball is fumbled. Scooped up. Golden on the far side. Running to the 20, 15, 10, inside the 5, dives for the goal line, he's in, touchdown! What a play! Marcus Golden on a scoop and score!
So combine that with the Patriots' issues on offense, and then all of a sudden we've got ourselves a ball game. No, we didn't, because no matter how close that game was in the first half, there was no way the Giants were going to win that game. And sure enough, New England scored right before halftime to make it 21-14. Then they finish it off with a couple of TDs in the fourth quarter to make it 35-14, which is pretty much what everybody expected. So now you have the corresponding questions. What's the deal with the Patriots offense? What is Daniel Jones? And most importantly, what the hell is pass interference? Why don't we go in order? No, the Patriots' offense is not clicking right now. There are injuries at wide receiver and along the offensive line, and they have not looked sharp since the Jets game, and Brady was off more than usual last night. Now, if you're going to use that as a reason to claim that they're no longer the team to beat in the AFC, man, that's on you. I'm not going there. I'm not doing that. I know these guys way too well to make that mistake. And it says here that guys will get healthy and they'll get it worked out because they always do. I've said it before. I'll say it again right now. And I will keep saying it until I can't speak anymore. The Patriots are done when Tom Brady and Bill Belichick say they're done. That's it. It doesn't matter how these guys are going in September or October. They'll be right there in December, January, and February. And by the way, they're fine. They're going pretty well. For all this talk about how they're not what they were, all this talk about how they're off to a slow start, they are 6-0. They do have the best record in the conference. They're probably going to be hosting the AFC Championship game again in January. All right, here's something else I know. Here's something else I know coming out of that game. I know that Daniel Jones is a rookie quarterback. That's not to crack him. That's not to bash him. It's a statement of fact. And I'm not going to go in on him after throwing 3 INTs last night. Or that if you took away that 64-yard TD pass to Tate, his stats on the night were 14 for 30 for 97 yards and 3 interceptions. Not exactly the stuff of legend. Not exactly the stuff of a Hall of Famer. Not exactly the kind of numbers that are going to get you into the Ring of Honor. You know, all those things that so many of you wanted to do for this guy after a couple of starts. I know the kind of defense he was going up against. I know the weapons he didn't have. But I also know that some of the throws that he made were really rough. Really rough. I also know he's got a bad habit of turning it over. 8 turnovers in 4 starts. Also not good. Again, I'm not here to crack this guy. I'm just saying now what I said after his first start. Slow the hell down. Relax. It was one game. He's a rookie. Like, we're on this weird, kind of bizarre yo-yo with Jones, where one side demands an apology after a good start, then the other side demands an apology for the apology after a bad start. I mean, why don't we just settle the hell down? Let's just stop. Everybody pumped the brakes. and I'll tell you exactly what we know about this guy. Let me tell you exactly what we know about Jones. He's a rookie, and that he might not be as bad as everybody thought that he was coming out of college, and he might not be as great as all of you are making him out to be after one win. In other words, he's probably not going to go down as the worst draft pick ever. And you can go ahead and stop cutting that mustard blazer for him right now. That's what I know about this guy. And there's one more thing I know about last night, from last night. There is an apology necessary for this. The pass interference rule sucks. I mean, we already knew that, right? In fact, I've been saying that since they announced that they were going to allow challenges, that it would be an absolute mess. And it has been, but it's so much worse than I expected. Let's go to the fourth quarter, last night's game. Golden Tate running a route. Jonathan Jones grabs him not once, but twice in the route, and it was not called.
Jones sets up. He throws it downfield, and it is incomplete.
I think that's pass interference. Look at the replay. Jonathan Jones' right arm is just wrapped around Golden Tate. Now, here's the problem, Ian. They're not overturning these calls.
The percentage is very low.
Very low.
39 pass interference calls have been reviewed this season. 7 have been reversed, so that's 18%. Well, Pat Shurmur has a wry smile on his face.
Going on the field stands. There is no defensive pass interference.
And he didn't win
it. New York has charged their third and final charge timeout and loses the challenge.
I mean, it's awful.
Westwood won. It is awful. I mean, on the one hand, you think no problem. That's why there is a challenge system. Giants head coach Pat Shurmur throws a flag. It's challenged. New York reviews it. It's so obvious and clear. There will be, wait, no penalty? They got it wrong once, and then they doubled down on it, and they got it wrong again. And the bigger question is why. Even in real time, you could tell that was a penalty. But cut the old dudes on the field some slack. Sometimes they're out of position. Sometimes they can't get to the right spot to see it. This is why you have the review, where they can look at it from every single angle in slow motion and then get it right. But they still get it wrong. And if you're getting that one wrong, you must be doing it intentionally. I'm not saying that they're looking to jam the Giants on that play. I'm not saying they've got a vendetta against Pat Shurmur. I'm saying they sure as hell do not want to make the right call in that spot. And either that's because the review crew does not want to hurt the feelings of the refs, or for some other reason. But it's insane. I mean, really, it's stupid. It's ridiculous. How do you not fix that? The thinking had been that they were only going to change the result of egregious calls. That was an egregious non-call, and they still didn't change the result. So what's the point of reviewing it if you're not going to correct it when you review it? No wonder head coaches are either raging or despondent when it comes to these calls. This was all brought about because of one of the worst non-calls in the history of sports, Rams-Saints. Maybe you've heard of it. This was supposed to correct that, only it's made it worse. Review was supposed to correct the Rams-Saints blunder, but based on what I've seen so far, I'm not sure these clowns would have flagged that even on review. And the only thing worse than getting a call wrong once is getting a call wrong once and then looking at it in slow motion and then getting it wrong again. And they're doing this time and time again. So in conclusion, the Patriots are who they've always been. Daniel Jones is who we thought he was, and the pass interference situation is going the way we thought that it would, horribly. He is a world number one. He joins us now, Brooks Koepka. Brooks, good to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, doing good. Everything good with you?
Good, man. Good. Great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for doing it. Let me start here. You made your season debut at the Shriners Hospitals for Children's Open in Vegas last week. How did you go about approaching that tournament, and how good did it feel to be back out there?
Yeah, it felt great to be back. Obviously, we had a very small off season. It was like 5 weeks for me, but put in some work and just didn't show. I felt close. Not the result I wanted. Nobody wants to miss a cut, but at the same time, it'll pay off in the long run, so I'm not too worried.
Brooks Koepka, my guest. And Brooks, your brother Chase made his fourth PGA Tour appearance last week. He opened things up with a 66 over the 4 days. He had three rounds in the 60s. How fired up were you to see him play the way he did?
it's cool. It's cool to watch him play. You know, this year's been a struggle for him. He's been pretty down. He's right now he's actually playing Q-School out in Utah right now, and he's in second place at first stage. So he's getting through that. It's cool to see. It's cool to see him succeed. You know, I'm obviously his biggest fan, and it's fun to watch. You know, he had it going there for a while too, and then unfortunately made some mistakes. But at the same time, it's all a learning experience, and you know, hopefully he can build on that.
He is the world number one. Brooks Koepka is my guest. You know, I read part of your resume at the very top, only part of it because I don't have time to read the whole thing. But as you look back on the season you had, which is one of the best in the history of golf, and you did it when you weren't able to practice a ton, what kind of thoughts do you have? I mean, is there a part of you that thinks, man, that's pretty damn good, or was that essentially what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, it is what I expected. I still think no matter if I'm practicing or not, I should be at the top, especially when it comes to those big tournaments. You see it in every other sport, you know, big time athletes, you know, they take care of it when they need to in big games, big tournaments. It doesn't matter. They get it done, find a way. It doesn't matter if you're sick or whatever. You know, you've seen it throughout the test of time, and you just got to figure out a way to battle through it and get done. I mean, no one ever is 100% healthy. So you're just trying to get through it and see where you're at. And, you know, sometimes it's nice. I'd rather be mentally fresh and not practicing than be playing and mentally tired. You know, it's one of those things. I think golf's just so mental.
Brooks Koepka joining us. I see you working. I know exactly what you're talking about when you say that. Now, when you mention like other greats in other sports, despite the year you had, you didn't sweep every Player of the Year award. And I thought you had a great quote recently when asked about that. You said, quote, yeah, it would have been great. But I think everybody in the room knows, I mean, LeBron has only won 4 MVPs. I'm pretty sure he was the best player for more than those 4 years. It's a great line. It's an accurate statement. Again, that said, though, is there a part of you that thinks, you know, it is a little weird that you or LeBron don't have more awards?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of, I guess, amazing. You know, I was kind of shocked at it that I didn't win Player of the Year. Because, let's be honest, the trophy is named after Jack Nicklaus. So, I mean, obviously, majors do matter, you know, when it comes down to it. So, I find that kind of ironic. But, you know, it's one of those things where, at the end of the day, man, all you're remembered by is how many majors you win. You know, I'm pretty sure everyone knows how many majors Jack Nicklaus won, how many majors Tiger's won, how many majors everybody else, Tom Watson, Gary Player, all these greats, Arnold Palmer. You know, if you ask them to be like, hey, how many PGA Tour events did you win? I don't even know. You know, it's one of those things. So that's what you're based on. It's basketball. It's about how many rings you've won. Football. How many Super Bowls? That's what you're judged by. And in golf, you know, it's majors for us. So it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm surprised, you know, I felt like I had a good enough year to win Player of the Year. But at the same time, you know, obviously I need to play better and make it, you know, a unanimous decision.
We're talking to Brooks Koepka. You know, hearing you lay it out like that, Brooks, it seems to me a lot of guys get to a certain point in their career where they've accomplished a lot. Maybe they get satisfied. Maybe they start to slip. But what I'm hearing from you, I mean, it sounds like you haven't lost anything at all, and you've got that edge. You've got that motivation still yet. How do you go about maintaining that? I mean, what's motivating and driving you at this point? Is it the majors, or is it something else?
Yeah, I mean, majors, obviously. I think everybody can tell. It's the event that I get up for. You know, every time there's a major, I mean, you look at it, guys, now you hear other guys say, you know, we're prepping for Augusta already right now. So obviously it's on everybody's mind. You know, Phil said it for years. You know, he's going to take the off season, and right when January 1 comes around, everybody's prepping for Augusta. So it's one of those things, majors. Yeah, I get up for them. I love them. And it's something that, you know, it's what you're judged by. So that's what motivates me. But at the same time, I just want to be the best. I want to be one of the best ever. And, you know, it's nice to finally be healthy again. And, you know, I'm going to try these next 5-6 years to really dedicate myself and see where, and actually try, you know, see what I can do. Cause you know, in golf in your prime from 30 to about 35 is when you really can make some hay.
Bro, can you imagine how good you could be if you actually tried? Brooks Koepka.
It's going to be fun. I hope so.
Brooks Koepka, my guest. You know, the thing is, this is all part of the plan, though. I mean, the legend has it, back in 2014, you sat down with people close to you, and you talked about being number one, world number one. Rory McIlroy at that time was number one. And according to your father, you looked at what he was doing and then what you had to do to get there. You also just said to me, Brooks, I want to be one of the best ever. Do you want to be one of the best ever, or is the goal to be the best ever?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is it's hard to, you know, I look at it like basketball, right? I'm a big basketball guy. You take it, you've got like the LeBron era, you've got the Kobe era, and then you got the Michael Jordan era. So it's hard to kind of compare those three. But yeah, you know, in this era right now, you know, I don't want to say post Tiger Woods, but we all know it's going in that direction where who's going to take a stranglehold of the game once Tiger's gone. Because I'm still going to be playing when he's done. So when he's done, I want to be that best player. I mean, you look at it right now, yeah, obviously Rory's arguably the, you know, Rory and Dustin are probably the two that are going to be in the competition, or, you know, in the running for that. And it's just interesting. It's always fun. I mean, obviously Dustin's got his major. You know, it's one of those things where everybody's jockeying for a position right now.
We're talking to Brooks Koepka. You know, you made that basketball analogy, and the fact is you've also made the point, Brooks, that I'm not your typical golfer. This is a quote now. I'm not your typical golfer. I'm not a golf nerd. I've got an athlete's mentality, a true athlete. It rubs people the wrong way. If it does, tough, end quote. Like, where does that athlete's mentality come from? Were you wired with that? Was it always like that? Or did you develop that, cultivate that, work on that?
A little bit of both, I think. Yeah, you've got to be born with it. I think every great athlete is born with a little bit of extra something. You see it in all the greats. But once you get a taste of winning, it's man, okay, you know, I don't want to let that go. So it's a combination of both. And then once you get the taste of winning those majors, I mean, no disrespect to any other win that I've ever had, but it's not the same feeling after you win a major and then another tournament. It's a completely different feel. Even around everybody around you, you know, the way I feel, it's completely different. And, you know, it's one of those things where once you do it, you just want to keep doing it. And then after that, it's like, man, I need to keep feeding this feeling.
Got a couple of more minutes with Brooks Koepka. He's the world number one. You know, Brooks, I so appreciate you doing this. So help me with this. For the last few years, it seems like there's this big effort on the part of the media in golf to either take a run at you or to try to figure you out. What do you make of all that?
I just laugh. I mean, it's quite funny to me. You know, the media is just doing their job, obviously. I get it. Sometimes I don't know why everybody, you know, I guess they kind of – I fit the mold of this, like, bad boy image of golf. It's kind of interesting. Everyone thinks I'm big, and I'm like, dude, I'm not big. You know, this big, bad, tough guy, but I'm not big. You know, we play golf. It's not a contact sport. But – you know, obviously, that being said, I'm bigger than a lot of other guys that are on the tour, so I guess I fit that mold for them, and that's the way that they're trying to drive it. And I don't let too many people in on what's going on in my mind. So it sounds stupid, but it's so simple, and they want an answer for it, and I'm giving them the answer, and it's like, well, that can't be just it. I'm like, it is. It's that simple. You know, you dummy it down to just get the ball in the hole quicker than everybody else. It's just that simple. Don't think about it. This is what I do for a living. I shouldn't have to. I'm not nervous. This is what I love. I want to feel that. Those nerves coming down 18. I want to feel that pressure because that means I'm doing something right.
You know what they always say, like the great athletes, there's so much, the expectation is so great that you finally get to a point where there is no exhilaration or joy in winning, just relief and misery in defeat. Is that the way it feels to you? Or, man, is there real exhilaration in winning a big tournament? Or relief?
No, it definitely is. I mean, there's obviously, you know, I remember after Erin Hills, the first major I won, it was like, man, that's why we run all those miles. Like that, you know, I hate running. That was my thing. It was like, man, that is exactly why, like, I can appreciate that. Appreciate all the hard work, all my coaches, everybody's done, you know, along the way. You see how much effort everybody put in, and it's fun, man. I enjoy that. That's why you train. That's why you put in all those hours on the range. That's why, you know, my parents sacrificed so much when I was a kid. And it's just a cool feeling, especially when you have everyone around you, your team, and everyone's around. That's when it's it's hard to explain.
Hey, Brooks, a couple of quick things before you go. You mentioned your coaches. You mentioned the work you put in. This is a great story. Chris Malloy was an assistant at FSU, and he was telling the story about how he was trying to organize sessions where you guys would run the steps at Doak Campbell, and it was supposed to be a punishment, but he said, quote, basically it was a problem because Brooks started to like it. After a while, he turned it into a workout session, good cardio, which to me is really funny that he's trying to crack down on you guys, and you're like, hey, man, this is great. What do you remember about those sessions?
Oh, I remember being terrible. But yeah, I did love it. I secretly loved it. And I think they figured that out. So they stopped that pretty quickly. It was, it's one of those things where, hey, I just figured it was making me better than everybody else that we were playing in college. You know, the results might not come right away, but they'll, eventually they'll come. It was fun. I mean, it pushed me. It, I don't know if anybody has ever ran the steps at Doak Campbell that's listening, but man, they suck. They really do suck. But at the same time, you know, it was making me a better person. I was figuring everything out, getting stronger. And, hey, the more hours you put in, man, you're going to see those results.
I'm sure it did suck, but just like that, I know you figured out early on to embrace the suck. And a last thought, Brooks, I think people listening right now would never believe this, but you and I actually do have something in common. The same guy cuts our suits, David August. So I've got to ask you, what is your approach to style? Do you like suiting up, or is it just a hassle that you have to deal with on occasion?
No, David August, he's the best, man. Yeah, he's so much fun. You know, obviously I've got to know him over the past maybe a year or so. I love dressing up, man. It's so much fun. You can see your style. I mean, you figure most of the time we're either in golf clothes, workout clothes, or just sweat. So it's different. You know, I like dressing up. It shows your style. It shows more fun. Really kind of shows us who we are. And I think, especially, I mean, if you look good in a suit, man, you're going to look good. And I like looking good.
Look good, feel good, feel good, play good. He is a PGA Tour pro, a four-time major winner, back-to-back winner at the U.S. Open, back-to-back winner of the PGA Championship. He is the world number one, and that was all part of the plan. Brooks, man, I appreciate you so much. I'm so glad you did that. That was a blast. Really good to have you on the show. Brooks, thanks so much.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, Jim.
This episode of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ. The brand new streaming sports news network. It is live 24/7, and it costs you nothing. That's right. Sports coverage that's always on and always free. Always. What do I always say? Free is me. Quality content for free. CBS Sports HQ's coverage always is focused on the game itself. Lots of highlights, breaking news as it happens, fantasy advice, and something we all care about deeply, gambling picks. Analysis to get you that extra edge. I know that when I turn on CBS Sports HQ, I will get the tips and the trends that I need to win my bets from people that I trust and respect. And don't forget, you get access to all this great coverage for free. I don't mean free for a week or a month, or you have some special cable package and it's free. I mean totally and completely free for everybody. You don't even need a login. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or any other connected device at any time and watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, just sports for real sports fans at the great price of completely free. Again, you don't even have to log in or sign up for anything at all. Download the CBS Sports app. Watch CBS Sports HQ today. He is Jim Trotter. Jim, what's going on?
Rolling, how you doing, man?
Good, bud, good. Being the big, big golfer that you are, I know you're impressed with Brooks Koepka. What do you think about this guy's approach, his mentality, the way he dominates? I'd never spoken to him before just a few moments ago. What's your take?
First of all, I wish I'd heard the interview. Unfortunately, I was doing some work and didn't catch it. But I'm a big fan of his. I'm a big fan of any golfer who can break 80, something I can't do. So obviously he can do that. But no, he brings a certain intensity, a certain focus, a certain ability to the game that I think I'm always fascinated by people who are great at what they do, and he's great at what he does.
No doubt. Jim Trotter joining us. I had to ask you about that because I know you're such a fan of the sport and you've covered so many different kinds of athletes over the years. Jim, in last night's Giants-Patriots game, there was another incident involving PI, or I guess I should say not involving pass interference. Golden Tate certainly appeared to be interfered with. It was not called on the field. Then it was not called on review. What was your reaction when you saw that last night?
that we're being asked not to trust what we see. And, it was this way with Pat, the catch rule. Is it a catch? Is it not a catch? And, for Jim, for a long time, I said, it's kind of like pornography. You know it when you see it. And I think we know a catch when we see it. And I think we know pass interference when we see it. And unfortunately, there have been, 40 challenges in terms of pass interference called or not called. And only 7 have been successful. And Kevin Seifert of ESPN posted a stat that said only one of the last 21 challenges have been successful. So to me, I just don't understand it. I think I see pass interference. I think most coaches think they know what it is. And yet when they challenge it, either being called or not called, they're unsuccessful. And you can hear the frustration in the coaches' voices today. Even John Harbaugh spoke out about it, that really they don't know what to do. And a lot of coaches now are simply going to keep the flag in their pocket rather than throw it, because it seems pretty certain at this point that you are not going to win any challenges on that. And I know that Al Riveron, the head of officiating, says he talks about there being a clear hindrance, so to speak, of a receiver. And again, I know what I saw last night. What I saw last night was pass interference, and the fact that it wasn't called, even on challenge, is just stunning to me.
In other words, if it appears to be porno, it is porno. And last night was a clear hindrance. So, Jim, what's going on here? Is it a matter of the folks handling the review not wanting to embarrass or overrule the officials on the field? Is this something else? Exactly what is this?
Well, Romy, if that's it, then don't put the rule in. It seems to be an overreaction to what happened in the Saints game against the Rams last year in the NFC Championship game. And everybody knew that there was an infraction there. And so there should be a way to have that addressed. And so they put in this rule. Well, once you put it in, you should follow it. And we all said at the time when they put the rule in, this is going to be really interesting because at times it's such a subjective call and you're putting the officials in a really tough situation. But again, when we see some of these calls to us as laymen, it's obvious. And yet back in New York, they are not calling it, or they're not ruling in favor of these coaches who are challenging it. So I don't understand it. I don't know if this rule was put in place simply so that if we get in a situation like we were a year ago with the Rams and the Saints, and there is an egregious call like that, that they have the opportunity to address it then, when people's, livelihoods and chance to win a championship and all those things are on the line. But as of right now, they're not calling it. And again, it's like last year when they put in the helmet rule and initiating contact and said when offensive players, if they lower their helmet to initiate contact, penalties would be called, but we didn't see them called. This is kind of the same thing to me. So I would have preferred if you just leave it alone then and say that the Rams-Saints was a one-off and move on. But instead, now we have all this uncertainty, which I don't think is good for the game.
Yeah, I don't either. In fact, it seems to me, Jim, at this point, if they saw that play again right now, I'm afraid they'd review it and not call a flag on that play or throw a flag on that play either at this point. I think that's how bad it is. Jim Trotter is joining us. Yeah.
No, it's not good.
All right, so I had 49er DeForest Buckner on the show in the first hour. If we go back to early spring, Jim, you were saying that you had faith that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan were going to get this thing turned around. What do you make of what you've seen from them the first 4 games?
Well, the first thing, Jim, was when I said that was I just wanted to see the team healthy for a change, particularly at the quarterback position. Since Kyle Shanahan has gotten to San Francisco, there were always injuries, and particularly at the quarterback position. And so knowing I have so much respect for how he's able to scheme and game plan and those things, I just wanted to see what he could do with a healthy squad, and now we're starting to see that. And look, this is a talented club. I don't think it's an elite club yet, but I think the fact that any time you can play defense and any time you can run the ball, you have a chance to be successful in this league. And right now, they're able to do that. And with Jimmy Garoppolo healthy, who I think still is learning, still has some things to prove, still needs to develop. But under Kyle Shanahan, I think, he's got one of the best offensive minds in football. And I think that he is going to continue to develop. So when you put that defense together with what Kyle is able to do offensively, I think this is going to be a tough team to deal with, throughout this season.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. Now, Jim, we're a few days out from the firing of Jay Gruden. Bruce Allen would like everybody to know that the culture there is, quote, damn good. which is a joke. I mean, it's so comical. When you look at how many head coaches they've been through since Dan Snyder took over, is there any reason to think that the things are going to change anytime soon?
No. And again, Jim, this is another example of don't believe your eyes. You know, things are not well in Washington, and the culture is not good, regardless of what Bruce has to say publicly. But I always say this, people point to Jay Gruden or Bruce Allen, and I always go back to it. It starts at the top. An owner sets the culture, sets the tone in an organization. And Dan Snyder has a way that he does things, and the record speaks for itself. You know, outside of bringing back Joe Gibbs for a second term after Joe came out of retirement, there really hasn't been much success there. And there's just always some sort of drama, and what we see happening there now with Dwayne Haskins and the way that whole thing went down and what's being said and what's being leaked out of the building, it's just not good. And the Trent Williams situation, look, if you have a player, you have an asset who has made it very clear he is not going to play for you, and right now Trent Williams seems very firm that he will not play for Washington again, then why not get something for that asset prior to the trading deadline? And maybe they will. We still have a few weeks to go. But based on everything that I've seen and the way that they handle these situations, I don't believe that they're going to trade them and therefore won't get anything for a player who could bring in, you know, a significant haul for them. And this is a team that clearly is rebuilding and needs pieces. But, no, the culture starts at the top. And so, you know, unless they're going to change owners, I don't see much changing.
We're talking to Jim Trotter for a few more moments. Speaking of culture, you know, for all the headlines, Jim, that Jerry Jones generates, does it feel to you like maybe he's taken a step back when it comes to football decisions and that he's finally left those to his football guys?
I'll say this to you, Jim. I think he's more receptive to their ideas. But I said to him 2 years ago exactly what you just said to me, that it appears he has taken a step back and he is relying on Stephen Jones and Will McClay more than he has in the past, and he is deferring to them. And in his own Jerry way, he put me in my place and let me know he's still the owner and he's still the guy who makes the decisions there. So having said that, I will say I do believe he is more receptive to their ideas. But at the end of the day, Jerry will let you know that Jerry makes the decisions.
Jim Trotter, my guest. Jim, Colin Kaepernick's reps released a statement yesterday addressing the false narratives regarding Kaepernick and reminding everybody that not a single team has brought him in for a workout. Seattle brought him in, but they did not work him out. When you look at all the other QBs who've been worked out or who actually have jobs, what do you make of that at this point?
Look, Jim, for me, there's no other way to say it than it's a joke. Colin Kaepernick, at the time that he was playing, was better than half the quarterbacks in the league. And while you might think he's not a great quarterback, that should tell you about the quality of play at the position in the NFL. So the fact that that teams are going out on the street and bringing in people that no one's ever heard of, who don't have a resume to stand on, and that Colin Kaepernick is still out there, to me is just a flat-out joke. And it's unfortunate because all he did was stand up and shine a light, or I'm sorry, take a knee and shine a light on something that's very important to a lot of people, on an injustice that's taking place in this country. So, you know, I've had this discussion with some owners about, you know, you hear about, well, it hurts the bottom line. You could hurt your bottom line if you bring him in and this, that, and the other. And I've asked a couple owners in particular whom I respect and said, when is enough enough for an owner or any person of wealth? You know, when do you have enough money? When do you stand on principle and say this is the right thing to do, although it may hurt us some on the bottom line? And the response that I got from each was, that's a very good question. So I never got an answer. But to me, I think ultimately history is going to show who was right in this whole situation, and it was Colin. And it's just unfortunate that he's being treated this way.
You know, Jim, when you mention owners and the way they go about making their decisions and what it comes down to, you and I have talked in the past about owners and how they hire coaches. One last thought. I'm looking at Pittsburgh, and I'm hearing the speculation that Dan Snyder might be interested in Mike Tomlin. I could see where Snyder would love Tomlin and would do anything to try to get Tomlin. Do you think it's reciprocated? What do you think Tomlin thinks of Snyder and that opportunity? Could you ever see that happening?
I've learned to never say never, Jim. But I know that Mike is from that area. I think he's clearly focused on getting things turned around in Pittsburgh right now. He has made that clear that he is focused on this week's game and not any of the speculation that's out there. I do know that for the last couple of years, I've heard from people in that organization that if Mike Tomlin ever became available, regardless of who Dan Snyder's coach was, that he would make a run at Mike Tomlin. So I do know that there would be interest on that side. But I think Mike is focused on getting it right. And look, if Mike were ever to be let go in Pittsburgh, the reality is that he's going to have his choice of jobs. So where would he end up? I would hope he would choose a place where, you know, that there is a culture of commonality in terms of everyone working together and where you can be successful. Is that Washington? It doesn't appear to be that way right now.
He is a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. And he is a very good friend of the program. Jim, I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
No, brother. Always glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
My man, Jim Trotter. Alvy, are you ready for the week that was? Roll it.
We're going to take it right to him the whole f***ing way. We're going to kick
No, it is a lot to ask, Alvin, but can I get that Deca Yeah from Monday?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Coming off that roadie to New York and back weekends.
And the NFL on CBS, you were blowing up on that, James.
I've got a question for you. How was your Sunday? Because Jay Gruden's Sunday is not that good.
Nobody's told me anything. I don't have a concern. I'll just wait and see. He works on Monday.
Yeah! Bad news, though. The key did not work today. They broke him off at 5 in the morning. They kicked him to the curb before sunrise. You couldn't wait until 9 a.m.? Doing what they did to Gruden is the ultimate rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic movie.
Iceberg, run ahead!
Well, you couldn't see that iceberg. Just turn the freaking boat, man. Jason Luckin for a...
The only surprise is that he lasted into a sixth season. That's an eternity by Redskins coaching standards. I mean, they should induct him into the Ring of Honor right now, Romy.
Touchdown, Raiders!
I'm 56 years old. That's the most fun I've ever had tonight.
I gotta imagine, Raider fan, that autumn wind has got to sound pretty damn good right about now.
You have a whole week off.
Oh, man, they earned it. He just shocked the world, did the Bears. How awesome would that be? I've never heard Chunk so fired up.
Greetings from the Fairmont Grand in Del Mar. Had to step out because the spa pool area, bro. No cell phones allowed, bro. So I'm standing out by the golf course.
That's not even a humble brag. That's a straight brag. Silk brag.
Bruh.
Brag.
Bruh.
Brag.
Bruh.
Brag.
Bruh.
Brag.
Come on.
And maybe it's just me, but when you see the production crew wheel out 4 gigantic stripper poles, maybe you ask what they're for if you don't already know. Are Batman and Robin coming down those poles? No. Snoop's coming.
Smoke some.
And I was like, what was that about? He goes, oh, I accidentally punched him in the face tonight during our routine. And he's going to punch me in the face tomorrow night in San Diego.
To make it right.
To make it right. And that's called a receipt.
Right. Code.
Code.
He lost the ball, and Nick Bosa
styles make fights. Everybody knows that. And anyone who had watched the Browns knew that Niners D-line was going to be a nightmare matchup. See the Lobster kind of scurrying up over to his kid, dropping his claw over his shoulder. Way to go, Junior. Ryan Holiday.
So I don't touch my phone for the first 1 hour that I'm awake. I want to start the day where I'm in control. I don't want to start reactive.
He muscled up on that. Muscling one. Up and finishing a batter or dry puking into a bucket.
Yeah! He muscled up on that. This is Justin Tuck.
Justin Tuck is my guest.
And it's been challenging to step out of my comfort zone and do something completely different from what I previously was known for. I'm loving every minute of it.
I'm just an old vet, man. I play music, get up in the morning, smoke a bowl, have my coffee, and just hope the world's a better place. You make it a better place as far as in my day, and I wanted to thank you, sir.
We're talking to Dak Prescott.
You want to put it behind you. You want to put it behind you quick, and you have to. But for me, you just want to get out there, and you're anxious to put your next performance on tape.
Here's the throw. Darnold's got it. He is out.
Better yet, that was an instructional video.
Arm strength, quickness, agility,
and body control. Tom Emanski would be proud.
I'm giving them my full endorsement.
Montreal! How y'all living? I want to hear from a seam head in Granby. Do I have a Rays fan in Pierreville? Can you hear me, Roxton Falls?
And you come to my place, we're going to have a big party. And I take you, me and my friends, we're going to go to the tavern and we're going to buy you lots of Quebec beer.
Are we going to really go to the tavern, Jacques?
Hey, Kyle, I'm not seeing the wisdom in your marketing strategy, bro. May I suggest replacing it with one that involves growing the hell up? Just saying.
Adrian Amos, what was the mood and the mindset among the players going into that game?
Just rebound onto the next week, get into Dallas, and stop that run game. We finished strong, and that's the big thing.
It's a grand slam! Howie
Kendrick
Does anybody want to talk about how good the Nats are? Or do you want to spend 3 hours talking about how bad the Dodgers are?
President of the Dodger Hater Club.
Roberts has got to go, and we got to trade Kershaw.
This game should have never went to extra innings.
Does not know how to manage the situation.
This one's on Dave.
He was seeing Kershaw's arm.
Dave needs to be what I am, Jim. Out.
We're talking to Arash Markazia.
They thought for sure they were going to find a way to win. And then for them not to win and for their season to come to an end like this, it was heartbreaking for them.
Everything people say is true right now.
Emailed
War Kershaw's mom, buying him a Happy Meal after the game. Poor fella. Their head coach, Dave Clawson, is our guest. Dave, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I don't know if I like your lead into it about all the baseball people getting fired, though.
I'm Peyton Manning, and you're the trainer, and I'm dropping D's right on your forehead.
Niner DeForest Buckner joins me for another moment.
Yeah, my dog, Kimo, he's a little Cavalier poodle. You know, he's small enough to where, you know, when he takes a shit, I don't need to worry about some, you know, big piles of shit everywhere. So
Brooks Koepka.
I was kind of shocked at it that I didn't win player of the year, because let's be honest, the trophy's named after Jack Nicklaus. So, I mean, obviously majors do matter.
Let's keep eating, boys.
Fire that bad yachty.
He looks like a big right?
Little darling.
You know, it's kind of like pornography. You know it when you see it.
It's actually damn good.
Yep, you got it. Thanks, Jim.
Building a log cabin.
I would always go to Larry Brown's.
Larry Brown. Like, he would just put it all out there.
Larry Brown.
Larry Brown.
Larry Brown.
Good night now.
Larry Brown.
Good night now.